You're listening to Radio Influence.
He got him
in the white trunks.
He heard him.
That's beautiful. Oh, that's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the tap. Wow.
And here comes a mission. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich
one
Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
UFC 223 is going to take place on Saturday night in Brooklyn, and it was just a couple of days ago. We all thought we were getting punked by the UFC, saying that Tony Ferguson was out of the main event. Well, we weren't being punked. It was absolutely true. And now we're going to get Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Max Holloway, and we're going to preview the five fights that are going to be a part of the pay-per-view on this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast on Radio Influence. Along with previewing UFC 223, we'll get into Bellator 196, which takes place on Friday over in Budapest. Plus, we'll talk about some MMA news and notes, what happened last weekend in MMA, tell you about some of the other fight cards that are taking place this weekend. Plus, going to have three interviews for you. Going to be talking to Julian LeBlanc, who's going to be fighting for a middleweight title up in Canada this weekend. Also, we'll talk to Peter Barrett, who's got a matchup coming up in Cage Titans. And our final interview is going to be with Danny Ramirez, who's going to be a part of that Combate America's card taking place next week in L.A. But Daniel, man, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Jason. I'm a bit bummed out because obviously, like most Americans, I thought the worst part of my Easter Sunday would be, you know, spending time with my family. That's always a bummer, right? You got to awkwardly say hello to people. Well, I don't know, because I'm Mexican. So what that means, Jason, is we spend our holidays with like roughly 200 family members at some obscure ranch. And the hardest part is just remembering which aunt and uncle is actually yours and whether or not you're supposed to remember them or know them. So that was a rough Easter. I thought that'd be the worst part of my Easter, only to get home with confetti in my hair and egg yolk to find out that the fight I've been looking forward to for so long was pulled for the fourth time. Just a tragic Easter Sunday, Jason.
Yeah, getting the text message from me going, guess what? The fight's not happening. I was at my grandmother's house, and all of a sudden, my phone just starts blowing up, and I see the Dana video, and I legitimately thought this was an April Fool's joke. I'm like, this is kind of cruel for the UFC to do this to their fans. That was my first thought, but then you make a couple of phone calls, and it's like, oh no, this is legit. He's out of this fight card, you know, and now you mentioned fourth time this fight has been booked. That's ultimately not going to happen. This is the second time that Tony Ferguson has pulled out of this matchup. Of course, Khabib has pulled out of this matchup twice. You know, you feel for Khabib Nurmagomedov. You feel for Tony Ferguson as well. I mean, this was most likely a life-changing fight financially for him. So he's out of this one. Max Holloway steps in. You know, I love the comment that Brian Butler, Max Holloway's manager, said when he reached out to Max. And Max said, let's do it, bro. This is how legends are made. Love that quote. Before we kind of talk about the Max Holloway aspect, let's talk about the Tony Ferguson aspect. Dana White has said that, you know, they're not going to go down this route again, which I think everyone can completely understand why Dana White would have that. But, man, I hope that at some point we see these two guys, you know, battle inside the cage.
Yeah, when this fight was canceled for the fourth time, I thought there's no way you can book these two again. But then I heard Dana White said they would never do it. So that's when I knew they're doing it next. Because as soon as Dana White makes some type of proclamation, like there will never be a women's MMA fight or Anderson Silva won't main event a show again, those things eventually do happen. So now that Dana White has gone on record and said that Khabib and Tony Ferguson will never happen, surely it will. I understand how hard it is to, for the fifth time, spend the amount of money it takes to advertise a fight. It's almost like the promotion the next time, if this is booked, you have to do it tongue in cheek, right? You almost have to be, you have to reference the fact this has been canceled four times. But look, once Tony Ferguson recuperates and Nurmagomedov hypothetically does win this title, there aren't a whole lot of options. Obviously, Connor and a few other lightweight contenders, but there is no person that is more deserving of a championship shot at 155 pounds than Tony Ferguson. So there's not a whole lot of moves you can do in the future once he returns. He deserves a championship opportunity. And the description of what happened here is one of a freak accident. It is one where, you know, and maybe your BS detector does go off when you do hear this story, but apparently the way it's been told is he injured himself by doing a rapid pivot as he was greeted by somebody else. So that's a completely random deal and not something that you can ever expect to happen to any human being again.
I mean, look, I'm not a doctor, and maybe I'm completely, you know, totally off the mark here. It makes you wonder, what was this just basically kind of maybe there was already some damage in that knee and that this kind of, you know, ultimately, you know, led to it. I mean, look, I'm not a doctor, so I have no idea. I think one of the weird things about this, and we kind of joke about the interim title fights that we see in the UFC, that allegedly, I guess, they're stripping Tony of the interim title. When he was on Ariel's show on Monday, he sat there and basically said, "I've not been told that," which is, I mean, he only won the interim title 6 months ago. And I know, I haven't seen a timetable of how long he's going to be out. But, you know, of course, you know, the UFC loves doing these interim title fights, but, you know, you think about it, and we'll get into this in a little bit, because we did have some questions about kind of the weight aspect. You know, it makes you wonder, does the UFC not officially strip Connor of the title till like after the weigh-ins happen and after actually the fights happen? Because there's a lot of aspects of that, but I mean, it's still, you know, the thing about like Connor and the lightweight title, it kind of shows you how much power he has with the UFC. Because I think it's been 500 days since he's won the UFC lightweight title and they still haven't stripped him.
Yeah, he definitely has the UFC where he wants them, because this is a guy that is life changing, what he can do. And it's also something where we've waited 500 days, and realistically, he might fight in like 3 or 4 months. So they're in a weird position where if they strip Connor of the title, but he's back in the octagon sometime in the summer, it's almost like they waited too long to strip him of the championship. But it is a situation in which you do want to hold your horses, because there is a likelihood of Max Holloway coming in overweight because of the issue here. So, look, I would say at this point, I would have stripped Connor the title a long time ago. But if you're looking at the current reality, Jason, you got to assess when you think Connor McGregor is going to compete at lightweight again. And if that answer is within the next 3 to 4 months, I would tell you do not strip him of the championship. Make this an interim lightweight championship or whatever. Just because, to me, it's just really awkward from an advertising perspective to strip this man of a title and he's going to defend it within the calendar year. But when you say 500 days, that is absolutely insane.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. Now, you know, Khabib Tony was my most anticipated fight of looking forward to. And as we mentioned, you know, who knows whether you ever see this happen. We got this question from Scott. He says, which fight will happen first? Khabib versus Tony or Canelo versus GGG2?
Oh, to me, without a doubt, Canelo GGG2. I don't care how much Mexican meat Canelo Alvarez eats. I think that Canelo GGG fight is going to happen on May the 5th, and it might get pushed back.
No, it's already been canceled.
It's been canceled? Did I not see that?
Oh, yeah, that came out on Tuesday.
Tell me the story.
Well, if you didn't see last week, basically the Nevada Athletic Commission has given Canelo a temporary suspension. I believe he's going to have his hearing sometime in May. But, you know, the Golden Boy announced on Tuesday that the fight is canceled.
That's insane. Because from what I read about this story is, like, he tested positive for low traces of glenbuterol, which is found in Mexican meat. And the two tests he failed were within, like, a week of each other. It's like, we see this with the UFC, that it's understood in some countries. Glenn Buterol is just a part of eating beef in said countries. Is there more to this story than I'm not picking up on?
I'll be honest, I haven't really dived deep into it, but you know, one thing, and you're mentioning just the very minor traces of this banned substance, but you know, it seems to be that people think that he might get a year suspension.
That's crazy.
But even, man. I mean, like, look, if you're going to place a bet in Las Vegas on which fight's going to happen first, Canelo GGG is absolutely where you would place your money because. You know, look, I mean, we've seen the Khabib Tony try to get made multiple times, and I hope we see this fight at some point because I think stylistically it's just such an interesting fight. Earlier this week when I was thinking about this fight, I was leaning on picking Khabib Nurmagomedov, and I believe the last time we previewed this fight back in March of last year, I think I picked Tony on the podcast. But as I kind of thought about this fight, I mean, you break it down. I mean, clearly, major advantage of the wrestling with Khabib Nurmagomedov. He's going to have the wrestling advantage on pretty much anyone he goes in there and competes with. The stand-up, slight edge to Tony. I don't give him a big advantage in the striking, but I gave him a slight advantage. You know, submissions, you give the advantage to Tony Ferguson, but really it came down to the intangibles of and so I was going to go with Khabib. Were you thinking the same thing, or were you thinking Tony?
I was also thinking Khabib, but it's one where you flip back and forth, and you really laid it out perfectly. I would actually extend the gap in striking talent. I think Tony's a bit better in the stand-up game over Nurmagomedov than you kind of give him credit for. I think the gap is there, and I think if that fight did play on the feet, we're talking about a Tony Ferguson victory. But the wrestling of Nurmagomedov is so damn good, and he – and when you have a fighter where you know he has the advantage over his opponent when it comes to making the fight his fight, that's why I was kind of leaning towards Nurmagomedov. Because even if you look at both these guys and evaluate their talent level, I would say you could make a case that Tony Ferguson is more talented if you just pick and choose each and every area you evaluate it. But because of how big and how great Nurmagomedov is with his wrestling and his top control and his ground and pound once he gets there and keeping guys completely smothered, that to me is such a big time aspect of his game that the advantage of controlling where the fight takes place is why I would have ended up picking him against Tony Ferguson and why he to me is obviously a fairly sizable favorite against Max Holloway taking some 6 days notice, because we have seen him go up against guys with stellar takedown defense, and that really hasn't been a part of the equation. It's hard to stop a Nurmagomedov takedown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I saw a stat the other day. I believe it was like in Max's first nine fights in the UFC, he was taken down 19 times, and his last nine, you know, zero times. But look, he's not going up against a wrestler like Khabib. We'll get into that. Another question we got, this came from JG at JGU9510. And if you ever do want to submit a question for the podcast, you can tweet at me at Jason_Floyd, or maybe it's a longer form question, you can do that by email me, Jason@radioinfluence.com. And JG writes, he goes, how should and does the UFC mitigate not only Tony Khabib falling through, but another lightweight contender fight falling through and having another belt feeling somewhat even more devalued? And that's an interesting question, Daniel, because you know, what happens if Max wins this fight coming up on Saturday night in Brooklyn? You know, now all of a sudden you've got, you know, two weight divisions that are, you know, you have the same champion, and that's not an ideal scenario for the UFC.
Yeah, and it's the downside of this fight happening, of Holloway versus Nurmagomedov happening, is that's going to push back a fight that I think we really want to see at featherweight. When we kind of listed out the fights we were looking forward to this year, Brian Ortega versus Max Holloway wasn't too far behind Nurmagomedov and Tony Ferguson. So a Max Holloway win would be something that would really hamper two different divisions. And just to answer the question, I think you got to have two philosophies if you're the UFC, while understanding you don't have that great of a role when it comes to fights getting canceled or not canceled. I think the philosophies are simple. If you want to value your championships, you make it an absolute rule that you will not create interim titles. This was a New Year's resolution we said in the beginning of the year. Interim championships, as we've seen over the history of this sport, just make things matter less, and they're kind of awkward. So say no to interim championships. And the second philosophy you have to do is you have to book these UFC cards where you have a championship fight on top and you have a top contenders fight under it, where you have suitable replacements getting ready to fight on that specific day. So you have somebody that is a marketable challenger and a rightful challenger from a sporting perspective that can just sub in. Those are the two advice that I would give to the UFC is say bye-bye to the interim championship, because there's a good chance we'll get an interim featherweight championship maybe due to this fight booking, and just stack your card with your top contender fight in each division when you're championship in that weight class.
Yeah, I mean, you feel like Brian Ortega is the interim, you know, featherweight champion just because of that win over Frankie Edgar. You know, I think in terms of the match with Max stepping up here, to me, this is a win-win for the UFC, because if Khabib wins, you can potentially set up Khabib Conor, which, you know, this is a fight that's been talked about for some time. Or if Max wins, you know, you set up a rematch between Max and Connor, which, of course, it's been a while since those two fought, two much different fighters. So to me, it's very much a win-win situation for the UFC. But, you know, something that we've mentioned about it is these best, you know, fights that ultimately not happen. Tony Khabib is up there. I know this is something you wanted to talk about. You know, when you brought this to my attention, one of the fights that came to my mind immediately was back at, it was going to be, I believe, UFC 187, John Jones and Anthony Johnson. I mean, to me, you know, when you think back at that time, I mean, that was a fight of, hey, you know, what, you know, can John Jones, you know, elude the power of Rumble? I mean, and I know you came up with some other fights that ultimately just never took place.
Yeah, there are so many great fights that never took place, and just a few that I got down. And if you guys have some, feel free to tweet at us what we missed. But the four that I had down, the first one is the only one that isn't a UFC fight, but Fedor Emelianenko versus Josh Barnett. That was supposed to be the main event of Affliction 3, and this was at a point where Fedor was unquestionably the best heavyweight of all time. He was an absolute phenom. And it was a matter of finding guys that would be worthy challengers. And Josh Barnett at that point in time was honestly the most worthy non-UFC challenger at the time. And that fight was exciting. I was so excited to watch Affliction 3, only for the promotion and that card to get canceled. But that to me was amazing, a fight that never took place. Speaking of amazing, like Anthony Pettis, when he was super hot, was supposed to take on Jose Aldo back at UFC 163. And that would have been a meaningful fight, as well as just a pure entertaining spectacle. You talk about John Jones. I mean, he's got a long list of canceled fights we could have picked here. But the other guy who kind of fits that bill is Dominic Cruz. And the fight I gravitated towards was UFC 169. He was scheduled to take on Henan Brow. And that would have just been one of the best fights in bantamweight history at that point in time. And that fight also got canceled. We did not see that one. And then one that in present day – it didn't really resonate. It wasn't a big-time fight, but historically it would have been interesting to see if these two clashed. Back at UFC 36, Matt Hughes was supposed to fight Anderson Silva, but Anderson Silva ended up signing a deal with Pride. So it would have been Silva's UFC debut, I believe, and although it wouldn't have meant as much as it would in hindsight, an Anderson Silva-Matt Hughes fight would have been really cool to go back and watch on Fight Pass.
Yeah, no, that would have been great. You know, look, it's what's done is done. It was not an April Fool's joke. But did you see what Connor tweeted after Tony pulled out of the fight?
What'd he tweet?
These fools pull out more times than I do with my dick.
Well,
Conor McGregor. You don't even know how to respond to that.
Yeah, and I mean, look, Conor McGregor, he's a guy with a big bank account, so surely he does that. Although, isn't he a married man?
I don't know if him and D. Devlin are married or not.
Jeez, can you imagine being his significant other and you see that on Twitter? I mean, that is an awkward dinner conversation. But yeah, Conor McGregor is a guy who he, if anything else, is really interesting when it comes to his ability to always have something to say on social media. He is a really – I mean, there are going to be PR classes taught regarding the material Conor McGregor has posted on the internet. Now, these are classes that will likely require a lot of heavy scrubbing with the material that he posts. But the thing with Conor McGregor is anytime there is attention on anyone, he's looking to put himself right there in spotlight. And obviously, I guess that was a question, right? You know the UFC had to have at least hit him with that hotline bling and asked him what he was weighing and how much money he wanted to take this fight this week.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been something if Conor would have stepped up on 6 days' notice. But, I mean, look, you give Max Holloway a lot of credit. I mean, I'm sure there's probably a lot of guys that actually don't want to step up on 6 days' notice. Eddie Alvarez has mentioned that the UFC came to him, but, I think he said he was weighing like around 190 pounds. Brian Ortega said that they had reached out to him about taking this fight, but Max Holloway ends up being the guy here. And, you know, it's going to be obviously part of the storyline with this one has to do with the weight based on things that have been out there. I know there was a Deadspin story on Tuesday that speculated that, you know, maybe he's got as much as 26 pounds to try to lose in these 6 days to make the weight at 155 pounds. Of course, with a title fight, there is no 1 pound allowance. And we had two different people ask us questions related to the weight. First up, there was Scott, who said, when you hear about Max's weight cut for this week, what percentage of you thinks, quote unquote, something bad could happen? And Dwayne Barth wrote in this. He says, it's been 24 hours since Brett Okamoto's interview with Holloway's nutritionist announcing an extreme weight cut is underway. I have seen zero pushback in the MMA media. Do you or Daniel feel, as I do, it's time for the MMA community to make a decision as to if we are serious about weight cutting being an athlete health and safety issue and support the leadership of people like Andy Foster, or just put our principles on hold for an exciting fight matchup? It cannot be both. I do believe this should be a big topic this week. I would hope that the people around Max Holloway are not putting him in a bad situation here. Before we started recording the podcast, I was thinking about a little under 2 months ago when the UFC pulled Gilbert Burns from the Fox card in Orlando in the end of February because of how much he weighed when he stepped in here. You hear Max's team say they wanted this at welterweight, but the UFC know it had to be at lightweight, and it makes you wonder how serious the UFC is when it comes to extreme weight cutting. You have to wonder if this fight was in California, if this fight would have happened. My guess is no. Look, massive weight cutting is an issue. And, I've always said this. I hope it doesn't take something seriously awful for it to change. But, I'm not around Max. I don't know what his weight is, how it's going, whatnot. But Friday morning is going to be a very interesting morning to see if Max Holloway makes weight.
Yeah, I think you can make the case that it's more likely than not that that he doesn't make weight. Because there are two issues when it comes to Max Holloway taking this fight. There's the weight issue, which is a big deal. And maybe for the UFC, the only potential fighters you could have reached are featherweights and bantamweights to take this fight, just because the way Eddie Alvarez laid it out, like, it is incredibly difficult for a lightweight who isn't cutting weight already and doesn't have a fight camp to make that weight on 6 days' notice. So you almost have to look at featherweights and bantamweights who are just a bit lighter. So the weight cut is a big issue. But another thing we aren't talking a whole lot about is Max Holloway is coming off like an ankle injury. How much time has this guy been spending in the gym, and what is he putting himself in? But his body is in a real bad way here, because you're talking about not really being able to train over the next few days, the entire week basically, after coming off an injury layoff. And the way George Lockhart, his guy, laid it out, like, this entire week, the only priority isn't really the fight, it's the weight cut. They're talking about low intensity workouts, diet without carbs. And how crazy is it that the guy you are paying that's in charge of your nutrition goes out to the media, you know, within a day of the fight being announced, and says that this is the hardest, tied for the hardest weight cut you've ever done. It's such short notice.
Yeah, that's one of those things. It's you know, a little rough. I mean, I know the Deadspin article mentioned a couple years ago where George Lockhart was working with Brian Rogers, who had a drop, I believe it was like 25 pounds in 5 days. I mean, that's a crazy aspect. That's going to make the weigh-ins very interesting. I also think it could make things complicated for the UFC is what happens if Max or Khabib is unable to make weight on Friday, and then all of a sudden, can you necessarily strip Conor of the UFC lightweight title, especially if the person who misses weight potentially wins on Saturday? So many things of, as you know, recording this podcast on late Tuesday evening, you know, things we don't know of yet, but which is going to make Friday very interesting. You know, when it comes to, I'm still as excited to sit on my couch on Saturday night and watch this pay-per-view because, look, yes, Max taking this fight on 6 days' notice. I mean, you know, hey, but it's still a great matchup. And I love the quote of saying, you know, this is where how legends are made. And, you know, and I'm sure Max is going to be getting a ton of money for this matchup. Now, in terms of breaking down the matchup, I mean, it's very simple. Can Max stay on his feet? If Max can stay on his feet, he's going to win this fight, but it's kind of hard to sit there and think that at some point Khabib's not going to get the fight to the ground.
Yeah, I think he's going to get to the fight to the ground real early. You did mention how Holloway really struggled against wrestling early on, or at least takedowns. I think he's really improved that aspect of his game, but it's also worth noting, as you said, it's not like he's gone up against the U.S. Olympic wrestling team with his contender. So I think it's improved, but I think a lot of that's is take away the situation here due to what one would assume lack of training and due to entire focus being on weight cut. And I'm glad we brought this up because it's important to criticize this before something does happen, because the signs are clearly there that it is kind of insane for Holloway to take this fight. What are the motivations for Holloway? I mean, they're pretty clear, and that's why you kind of maybe need someone that isn't Max Holloway to help him with these decisions, because for Max Holloway, how do you look at this guy and tell him not to take this fight? Because the reward is kind of amazing, regardless of the result of the fight. You mentioned the payday. Surely this is going to be a massive, massive payday. We're talking likely life-changing money for a champion to take this fight on these type of circumstances. So you tell Max Holloway you have a six-day work week and we're going to give you this amount of money in your bank account. It's so difficult for a guy to say no to that. And two, you talk about legacy like he did. And if he does pull this off, I mean, he is a pretty big underdog here, just given the situation, without even looking at the skill set between these two. And if Max Holloway does pull this off, not only does he get a payday today, but he becomes a two-division UFC champion. And with this whole story, you got to assume moving forward, this is a big-time pay-per-view draw.
Yeah, I mean, and that's still one of the things that's, you know, from the business side is going to be very interesting about this pay-per-view is that we're going to find out, can Khabib Nurmagomedov draw? Can Max Holloway draw? I mean, that's something that's very much into this. I mean, you know, look, Khabib has a huge wrestling advantage, but vice versa, Max Holloway has a huge striking advantage.
He really does, and he's really a special striker. I'm interested to see how that stand-up looks in this fight again, Jason. Because when we've looked at the stand-up, so much of performing at that high level is due to preparation. And I think it's obvious that Max Holloway hasn't been able to prepare that way. So I do wonder how he looks on the feet. But if he performs anywhere close to where he has in his more recent fights, his stand-up is going to give Nurmagomedov fits. Prognosticating on what's going to happen, though, I don't think he's going to have much of an opportunity to do so, Jason. I think Nurmagomedov is going to be successful with the takedowns on his first couple attempts. And even if he's not, he's going to be so tenacious with attempt after attempt, he's going to eventually bring Holloway down. I would love to see a Max Holloway victory because it's kind of a beautiful story. And this is also a fighter with absolute great fighting spirit. So this could be a situation in which he does lose early on in the fight, but still muster an ability to either lock on a submission late, get back on the feet, and have a flurry late. So those are possibilities. But to me, the most realistic outcome is a typical textbook Nurmagomedov performance where he does get takedowns, he does rain down ground and pound, and he does make this fight incredibly ugly and make Max Holloway's face look ugly, as good as it looks now. It looks beautiful, Max. But you do lay it out, though. Max Holloway has really showcased a special nature on the feet recently. Like, he has really figured out the spacing at the distance of his combinations and some of his elusive nature. So in a normal fight, Jason, this one is much more interesting to me. I think it's much closer. But because of these circumstances, I think you look at the betting odds and I look at best fight odds. I believe Nurmagomedov is like a 300 favorite. Could be wrong there. But it's something of that nature. I think that's justified. He's actually 470. I think that's justified just given that it's absolutely insane to look at the hand Max Holloway was dealt and to expect him to become victorious against a fighter who was as damn good as Nurmagomedov.
Yeah, I mean, my pick is Khabib in this matchup just because I think what you're going to see out of him, I think you're going to see him fight the way he fought back in December. I think you're going to see him come very forward and eventually get this fight to the ground. I think the question mark is, can he ultimately get the stoppage here? But you cannot count out Max Holloway in this matchup. And if he does win, I mean, this is what legends are made of. It'll be a great story. And I have to imagine, if you're Brian Ortega, you gotta be rooting for Khabib, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I'll let you get to your point, but this, the reason I say that is, if you're the UFC, Max wins. Max Connor, Aloha Stadium in Hawaii.
Oh yeah. Max Holloway wins his lightweight championship. He's gonna stay a lightweight. Now, for Brian Ortega, you can make the case maybe, well, the featherweight division just became his and he can become the kingpin. But, yeah, Brian Ortega is the one big loser in the situation. And I will say, just looking at his history, just a note here, this is the biggest time. Max Holloway has never been a bigger underdog than he is now throughout crazy. His entire career.
That's crazy. I mean, but it's – look, I'm still excited to watch this fight, interested to see how it plays out. It's going to be very interesting. Of course, this is one of two title fights. The other one, you know, Rose and Joanna, of course, rematch from November. And, you know, is it just me or is it the Rose camp has been very quiet? Everything you hear about this fight has to do with Joanna. And you know, hearing her doing these interviews, I just get the feeling that she's not giving Rose the respect Rose deserves in getting that win in November.
Yeah, man. Doesn't it feel like a little bit of a Ronda Rousey effect here? Doesn't this remind you a little bit of how Ronda Rousey handled her losses? It seems like the excuses Joanna's making maybe are somewhat valid, but I think the mental place you have to put yourself in to reclaim your championship is you got to stop making excuses and start giving your opponent more credit.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I look at it is, I mean, the weight cut clearly did play a role. But you can't sit there and just say, that's why you lost the fight. Did it play a role? Yes. But I think there's two other factors of why she lost back in November. I think part of it is, it was the first time in the UFC that she could not get in her opponent's head. You know, Rose won the mental warfare heading into this matchup. And then three, it's Rose's abilities. And, you know, and you have to look at since Joanna went to American Top Team, has she evolved or is she still the same fighter and the rest of the division just caught up with her? You know, and this is, you know, there's a lot of fights on this card that are kind of coin flip fights for me on this card. And the co-main event is one of those, but my pick is Rose.
Yeah, and it's a pick that I would like to make, but I'm still going to go with Jan Jacek. But it's one where if you go and you pick Joanna and she loses, you're going to feel kind of dumb after, because the performance we saw out of Namajunas last time out was lights out and stellar. Namajunas came out and fought at a completely higher rhythm and tempo than I had ever seen out of her. It almost seemed like, despite the fact that the fight necessarily wasn't the longest in the world, I think you got all you needed to out of that fight. To me, Namajunas was just a step ahead of Joanna Jacek, and it was just like Rose was fighting at a faster speed than Jan Jacek. So if we see something similar to that, I'm going to feel stupid in picking Jan Jacek. But just based on the prior history of both fighters before their original matchup and how highly I thought of Jan Jacek over Namajunas heading into that matchup, I'm going to kind of lay into that long-term history of both fighters to pick Jan Jacek in this fight. But this could also be the starting point of something special out of Nami Hunes at 115. And this is just a great fight, a fantastic fight. And it's a fight where it's not the worst thing in the world for Jan Jacek with the loss here, because obviously there is greener pasture at strawweight for her. So it'd be interesting to see what happens with either fighter coming out of a loss. I like Jan Jacek here, but Rose Nami Hunes looked like a very special fighter here. And when it comes to who has won the pre-fight hype, I think you got to easily give it a 10-8 to Rose Nami Hunes, despite the fact that she has said relatively nothing.
I will say this. The answer to the question I'm about to ask you for me is no. I'll see if you agree with me. Will the winner of this fight headline a UFC pay-per-view in their next title defense?
Man, that's a great question. And I will go with yes, but that's only because the main event gets canceled. That is my prediction. I mean, moving forward, who do you think challenges for the title next?
I mean, you got to kind of look at Jessica Andrade.
I guess here's the other situation. What if this fight is so nuts, Joanna wins? Okay, so if this fight is absolutely insane, a 5-round affair, and Joanna on Jacek wins, and it's close, I think you could absolutely headline Joanna Rose 3. That, to me, is a situation where you look at Joanna Rose 3. But Andrade is a fairly weak opponent, and you just got to say, is the A-side here that big of a draw? And if you're the UFC, most likely scenario, probably not. But maybe something magical does happen, and moving forward, Rose takes on Joanna for a third time, and that's your headliner.
Yeah, I mean, I think if Joanna wins, we are looking at an immediate trilogy matchup, but we'll see what happens there. You know, and we've talked about this now for a couple weeks, because we've had a couple weeks to really dive into this card, is we both love this event. This is a great fight card. I love the pay-per-view. Have absolutely no problem forking over, $65 to DirecTV on Saturday night to watch these fight. But and I love the other three fights on this pay per view. And you know, in terms of ranking these, you know, 1, 2, and 3 in terms of the ones I love the most, it's tough, Daniel. But I end up going Iaquinta Felder, Moncano Cater, and then Chiesa Pettis. Do you have that the same way?
I have one difference, and that's in the 2 and 3 spots. I got Pettis and Chiesa number 2, Moncano Cater number 3, but to me that is a really thin margin. I thought Felder and Iaquinta is a fight that really made itself known as the top fight among the three, just because you were talking about a really important fight at lightweight, a much more important fight than Chiesa Pettis, because like, don't look now, but Ali Aquinta is so damn close to a title shot with 5 consecutive wins and a guy in Felder with 3 wins. And that fight itself is going to be great, I think, based on what actually happens in the cage. But you know what I'm looking forward to the most is the post-fight interview with either guy. Ali Aquinta is a madman. Paul Felder is an excellent communicator. So looking at that prelims, it is really stacked, really good. Looking forward to all three fights. But Ali Aquinta, Paul Felder to me is the one to look at. And if Ali Aquinta wins, he becomes a major discussion point when we're discussing 155-pound contenders. A win here might set up a fight against Tony Ferguson for him, if we don't give Tony Ferguson a title shot.
Yeah, I mean, all these fights are pretty much coin flip fights for me. My picks are Calvin Kattar, Anthony Pettis, Paul Felder. You know, Iaquinta Felder and Chiesa Pettis, I really went back and forth on those matchups because I think it can go either way. I mean, with Anthony Pettis, I just don't know what to expect.
Yeah, and that's kind of why my pick in that fight is Michael Chiesa. This is a big time, what's the word we used to say all the time, crossroads fight for Anthony Pettis, just because a loss here to Chiesa would be pretty traumatic based on where he once was, and he obviously has already had some major failures. And I think Chiesa is going to get the victory here, but it is a coin flip fight. I also do like Calvin Kattar, and my pick is Ali Aquinta. But looking at this entire lineup, this entire main card, and if you ask me the question, which fighter has the most to lose, I think it's a toss-up between Joanna Jacek and Anthony Pettis, and I would probably give the nod to Anthony Pettis because he would find himself in a real rough spot with a loss here.
Yeah, I mean, you have to manage if Joanna loses. Her next fight's got to be 125.
Yeah, and that's why she doesn't have as much to lose, because she has a quick and easy way to reinvent herself. Something Anthony Pettis has tried to do in another weight class and it just hasn't really been super great. And I do think Jan Jacek, with the loss, will likely still find herself Well, Valentina Shevchenko does look like a damn warhorse, so it may be hard to get that championship. But fortunately for Joanna, with the loss, she immediately becomes the number two women's flyweight fighter. So there isn't a whole lot to lose there, other than there is a lot to lose just because it's like Joanna has an opportunity to regain that phenom status that she once had. And with the back-to-back losses, that would be further away than it's ever been.
Of course, last week on the podcast, we talked about the prelims. Why do I think Kovacevic and Herrig ends up winning the Fight of the Night bonus?
I think because you look at two fighters that are all action all the time, high, high volume of fighters, and they're in a nice spot in the main card. I think it's really going to be difficult for them. But the thing is, you look at main events that typically win the Fight of the Night or co-main events, and there's a big likelihood that we see a quick finish in the co-main event and we see a total beatdown when it comes to wrestling in the main event, which really opens things up. So Kovacevic Herrig would not be my pick, Jason, for Fight of the Night, but it certainly is going to be a good one. But if you want my pick for Fight of the Night, I'll go with the fight right under it, Ray Borg and Brandon Moreno.
Oh, I thought you were going to go with Ai Quinta and Felder.
Yeah, I mean, that to me is the favorite on the main card to be the Fight of the Night.
I mean, I am jacked to watch this pay-per-view on Saturday, and that doesn't happen very often. I mean, you look at the last two pay-per-views, just we're not excited. You look at 221 back in February, you had a premium main event. The rest of the card was an Australian Fight Night card. 222, you had a showcase fight for Chris Cyborg in the main event, and you had a very premium fight in Frankie Edgar and Brian Ortega. But, when the UFC puts their best foot forward, these are the type of pay-per-views that they can bring. And I've said this, multiple times. The UFC's got to make pay-per-views great again. This is a great pay-per-view, but I'm sure there's probably people in our listening audience that are like, guys, I don't have the $65. It can be expensive to go out and watch a fight at a bar and get some drinks, get some food. There's still a lot of value to sit there and, watch those four fights on FS1. Four good fights there. And if you have a UFC Fight Pass, subscription, some solid matchups on there. The guy that has to have your attention is actually going to be the first fight of the night. Khabib Nurmagomedov is a guy to pay attention to, a prospect there at 145 pounds. So, top to bottom, this is just a great fight card.
Dude, UFC 223 is what I like to call two orders of wings card. What that means is I stroll into Buffalo Wild Wings at 6 o'clock Central, maybe 5:30 or maybe 5 o'clock. I'll bust out my laptop, connect to the Wi-Fi, watch some Fight Pass, and it's two orders of wings because I'm going to order a whole hell of a lot, maybe 20 wings when the prelims start on FS1 and Evan Dunham dust it up with Oliver Aubin-Mercier. But, man, rarely will I stay committed for 5 to 7 hours inside a Buffalo Wild Wings establishment. That's going to be the case for UFC 223. So once we see Joe Rogan and Dana White, or Joe Rogan and evil Joe Rogan, Jimmy Smith, or whoever's doing commentary, screaming at each other about the fight card, I'm going to order a second helping of wings. I'm going to put down 40 wings Saturday night. I'm looking forward to it. And UFC 223, top to bottom, looking forward to some Fight Pass fights. This is a two orders of wings, maybe a little dessert. And by God, if you are a combat sports fan, this is heaven, absolute heaven of a week. If you're a wrestling fan and you're an MMA fan, there is too much content to watch with WrestleMania and all of the wrestling events surrounding that. It's just a hell of a week, man, to be a combat sports fan.
And Showtime has a boxing card on Saturday night as well. So if you want to take in some boxing. In terms of my picks for prelims, I'm going Magomed Sharipov, Clark, Evan Smith, Lobov, Aubin-Mercier, Lauzon, Moreno, and Kovacevic.
God, I really hope my picks haven't changed from last week. Kovacevic, Moreno, Lauzon, Aubin-Mercier, Caceres, Beck Rollins, although I do not feel good about that pick, Devin Clark, and Zbit Magomed Sharipov. Who's your performance of the nights?
Performance of the nights, I will say I'm going to go – man, I don't think it – God, if Nurmagomedov dominates, it probably he gets one of them. But I'm going to say, I'm going to go Paul Felder and Magomed Sharipov.
Wow, that's a good pick, actually. I'm going to go Nurmagomedov in the main event, and I'm going to go with Joe Lauzon.
Yeah, you know, Lauzon, one of those guys, you kind of, you're not sure what to expect. Cesaris Lobov was one of those fights. I was like, man, I don't know what we're going to see here. But look forward to watching these fights coming up on Saturday night. But before we get into Bellator 196, do want to let you hear my first interview. It's with a 5-0, 185-pound fighter. He's going to be fighting for a title matchup coming up this weekend. And his name is Julien LeBlanc. I had a chance to talk to Julien in the past. Had a chance to catch up with him earlier this week to talk to him about his title fight coming up on Saturday night. Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man is going to be fighting for the middleweight title at Elite One MMA on Saturday night, April the 7th. It's Julien LeBlanc. Julien, I appreciate the time. I was watching another interview you recently did with James Lynch where you were talking about being down in Florida training at Hard Knocks 365. When you're a fighter who's, you know, in a town that obviously you're not, you know, from or train at, can it be like a little bit of an uncomfortable situation walking into a gym where no one really knows who you are?
Yeah, it was, you know, I was really like not shy, you know, but like at the beginning when I got in, I was like, oh damn, like should I just leave or should I stay, you know, because I didn't know no one actually. And how it happens, I was there, I was supposed to, like, you know, train at American Top Team, but unfortunately it didn't happen. I think it was a little bit complicated, and they were asking me to pay a lot of money to train like 4 or 5 days there. So I was like, okay, you know, it's not that worth it for that much of money. But I just wrote, I follow Luke Rockhold on Instagram, Michael Chandler, Usman, you know, the Nigerian Nightmare. Whatever. So I follow them, and I see their story that they do, and I'm like, oh, it looks like Florida. So I just go on Google Map, and I put Hard Knocks 365. I didn't know like where it was, and it was 8 minutes from where I was staying at my girlfriend's place. So I was like, okay, I have to shoot them a message, you know. So I just shoot them a direct message on Instagram, you know. Some people don't even look their direct message, you know, but they answered like 5 minutes later, and I said, you know, I'm a pro fighter from Montreal, and so I just said, basically, can I come? And I'm really respectful, blah blah. And they said, yeah, man, you can come and try it. So I just got there, and there was like those 20 faces that I seen, you know, fight on TV a lot of time. So it was funny, and it was a great experience. But yes, I was like a little bit shy at the beginning, you know. I was, oh shit, okay, am I at the right place? But you know, a guy that were really really kind, and it was Ong Lan Sang. He's the ONE FC middleweight and now light heavyweight champ, so he's a double champ. So, and he's very good, and he's the first one who came to talk to me, and he asked me if I wanted to partner up with him for the drills. So, you know, it started like this, and I ended up training there the whole week, and it was a very great experience. You know, after the first training, Henry Hood came and said, hey, if you want to train the whole week here, it's going to be free, man. You're good, and, you know, you got good potential, and you're respectful. We like that. So, you know, it was a really fun experience. So, yeah, it was great.
Is it one of those things when you go into a gym that you've never walked into and you're only going to be there a couple of days that maybe you try to, you know, basically see what they do and how you can incorporate back at your home gym?
Yeah. Actually, a thing that that was very good about there, it sounds stupid, but it was how they warm up. Like, I never seen guys like warm up, like good warm ups like that, honestly. And that, I think it's even like when I train in Ottawa or in Montreal, like sometimes, you know, our warm up is we talk and we fool around a little bit, you know, and we just like stretch on our side, you know, do a couple stretch, and then we're like, okay, we start sparring or wrestling like crazy, you know. But that's how you get injured, you know. So there it was really like a 15 minute warm up all together, and it was a really intense warm up, I should say. So it was great to see this. I was like, okay, I think we need to incorporate this, you know, training back home, you know. And of course, the coaches there are incredible too. I know they got really great coaches. There's Henry Hoot for the striking, and there's a, I don't remember his name, but there's another guy from Toronto. He's a very good striker too, and there was a very good coach of wrestling grappling. So it was it was excellent.
Outside looking in, a lot of things we hear from fans is that, oh, it's a title fight. You have to change so many things. You have to get ready for a 25-minute fight. But in reality, is it not really many things you have to change in terms of your preparations for a 5-round as opposed to a 3-round?
Actually, not really, because, like, I got to say, never, like, I go for sparring and I just do 3 rounds, you know? We always try to do, like, at least 8 rounds of 5 minutes when we spar. So, you know, like Monday, I did 10 or 5 minutes in a row with a fresh guy every 2.5 minutes. So, like, for sure, I push my limits a little bit, like, further. But it's basically, you know, same thing. It's just hard work. When you're in the gym, you know, you just work until you're done. And it's like it's the same thing always. You know, for sure, is I'll have to pace myself. You know, in the fight, I know Christian is a wrestler, so you know it's gonna be a tire. I'm gonna be tired, and he's gonna be tired for sure. You know, I'm looking forward for a lot of wrestling, but I'm looking forward for a lot of striking too. And no matter what, 3 rounds, 5 rounds, training is the same, and you know the goal is the same too.
Title fight, but also the storyline along this fight is someone's O has got to go. You're 5-0, he's 5-0. Something you necessarily don't always, you know, see on the you know, quote unquote regional scene. You know, two guys young in their career, both taking a huge, you know, opportunity here. But also, I think it also shows, you know, what you're willing to do in terms to get to, you know, those bigger stages. But in terms of Christian, what do you see as the biggest challenge that he's going to bring to you?
For sure, it's wrestling. Like, you know, I've talked to one of his last opponents, and he told me, like, you know, we already knew it, but he told me basically, like, be ready to wrestle. You just want to do this, you know? I've heard he's got good hands, too. He looks like a heavy hitter, but I'm pretty sure when we're going to be in there, he's not going to want to strike with me. So I'm looking forward for that takedown. And like I've heard, he's getting ready because I have big power kicks. He's getting ready for this, so you know we'll see. But I'm pretty sure he's gonna try to wrestle, and you know he's gonna try to time me and just close the gap. Like the good thing I think is that we both, you know, for the wrestling part, we're both kind of body locks guys, you know. Like what I saw from his last fights, you know. But it's been 1 year since he fought, and I'm sure he got better. You know, last fight I did was only 37 seconds. So, you know, it's been like 1 year since I have a decent fight too. Not a decent fight, I don't want to see this, but like a longer fight. So, you know, but I'm better than last year too, and I'm better than in November too. So I think it's going to be a great challenge for both of us.
Besides controlling his wrestling in this matchup, what do you see as your keys to victory?
I need to, you know, I'm taller than him, so I need for sure to try to establish my reach. And, you know, I've got to work those hands, you know, I've got to time in. I time him when he comes in, you know. I want to make him pay every time he's tried to come in, you know. I want to make him pay. I want him to not, I want him to stop wanting to come in inside, you know. And for sure, you know, in that clinch, be very aggressive. And as soon as I have the chance to separate, you know, I'm not scared to wrestle with him, but like if I can keep it on the feet, you know, that's my goal.
I know a lot of people are magically going to look at the future. They'll look at you, say, hey, win here, put you 6-0. Do you even allow yourself to think about what the next step could be?
Actually, it's a good question, because I think, you know, I've been added to the list of prospects of the UFC, you know, last week, and everything. It made a big buzz, you know, like in my hometown and everything. And it's an extra motivation, but also it's, you know, I don't have to think about that, because it's gonna put too much on my shoulders, and I don't want to, like, it's, no, right now it's Christian, like, you know, in my head it's kill or be killed, you know. I'm ready to die in that cage, and whatever happens after, like, I don't think about it, because if you put too much pressure on your shoulder, something's not gonna work, you know. So I just gotta go with the flow. That right now it's this fight, you know. Life gave me this fight, so this is what it is for now, and we'll see after. But for sure, you know, my goal, you know, what's the my goal for sure is to get on the Heater Contender Series in June or in Calgary in July. You know, I think they're coming to Calgary, yeah. So that's my goal. But I think that's the goal of Christian too. So right now we both have a big fight next week. So it is what it is for now.
Speaking of your hometown, is there anyone that you grew up with that is just shocked that you are a professional fighter?
Everyone. Everyone. Honestly, I was my buddy is driving. He's like me. Everyone, because I wasn't that guy, you know, in high school that was good at sports. I was good. I was okay in hockey. I was a goalie, but I wasn't that much serious, you know. Like if I wouldn't been serious like I am today, who knows what could happen? But for sure, nobody would have thought this. Like even when I did my first amateur fight, and I was training for 3 years before I did the first amateur fight, and like, you know, I got beat up a lot in the gym, but you know, I didn't care about getting beat up. And I think that's why, partly because I'm 5-0, it's because I had so much adversity in my trainings, and like when it's for real, like I just open the fire, and I'm a different guy in there. But like for sure, you know, my first amateur fight, my parents I'm like, oh, okay, I'm fighting there, and blah blah. They're like, okay, like he's fighting. Like, what does it mean? Because they never, you know, it's not like hockey. Like parents don't come and look your practice, you know. So I was like practicing in the shadow with my coach and teammates, you know, like for 3 years. And I'm like, okay, I have my fights. They're like, oh, okay, like his fight, like, oh, big deal, you know. So they came and like, they see, you know, I was in the main cards because I sold I was in the main card, sorry, because I sold a lot of tickets. So the first fights, they were like, damn, okay, it's real here. So they were really stressed. And the guy I was fighting was bigger than me a little bit, and he had a lot of tattoos, you know. So and like the six pack, and me, I'm not a guy that I'm not like that athletic guy, a Calvin Klein guy, you know, like, but I'm in shape, but. Know what I mean? So the other guy has big tattoos and everything. So I just went in there and knocked him out with a roundhouse kick to the head in 15 seconds. Like he was legit asleep for 5 minutes. First fight ever. So like everyone was shocked in this place. Like all my family, my parents, my uncle, my aunts, my friends. So it was a great feeling. But I think that started the thing right. And right now, you know, like even I am my part-time job is I don't know how you say it in English, but I'm like a replacement teacher. You know, when teacher calls sick, they call me. So at my high school that I went, and all the teachers there are like, hey, we would never imagine that of you. No, but I get great support from that, and you know, people knows that I've worked hard for it. It's been 10 years now, so I really wanna you know, do my 10 years with that gold belt around my waist.
Here in the United States, we call that a substitute teacher. Now, has there ever been a time where you have, you know, you've gone to work a job and then one of the students has known who you are and knows that you're a fighter?
Yeah. Honestly, a bunch of them knows. So that's nice. Like, the eyes, oh, it's you, Julien Leblanc, I'm doing MMA. I'm like, yeah. And, oh my God. And so, you know, they ask me a lot of questions. I'm a nice guy, you know, they respect me, you know, so sometimes I show them my videos of my fights, and they all get excited, but it's fun, you know, it's cool to see this and to see all the kids, you know, looking at you and being as a model, you know, and plus, I tell them, hey, I did my high school here too, so, you know, they're like, oh, okay, it's not that bad.
It kind of shows them that you can make something of yourself, but you got the fight coming up here Saturday night, April the 7th. It is Elite One MMA. Julien, I appreciate time. Look forward to seeing your matchup, and let everyone know they can follow you out on social media.
Yes, well, I want to say thank you to you for having me. It was really cool, and I hope we can talk each other really soon. And you guys can find me on Instagram. It's Leblanc MMA altogether. Or on Facebook, Julien Leblanc MMA, my Facebook page. Thank you very much again.
And there was my conversation with Julien Leblanc. It's Daniel. It's not too often on the regional scene we see two undefeated fighters in this situation. Both guys are 5-0, stepping up to fight each other. So you give a lot of credit, to those guys stepping up there on short notice. But that'll be his fight is on Saturday. On Friday over in Budapest, we have Bellator 196. Of course, a tape delay show here in the United States on Friday night. A lot of MMA action you can take in. You have CES on Access TV. Titan FC 49 will be on UFC Fight Pass. And, of course, the Bellator event. For me, really it's two reasons to watch this fight card. First off, Ed Ruth, as he starts his drop down to 170 pounds. Of course, initially supposed to fight 170. Opponent pulls out, so now he's got a catchweight matchup of 175. So interesting to kind of see the development of him. Had him on the podcast last week. One of Khabib's training partners there at AKA. And then, with Benson Henderson and Roger Huerta, I'm not sure what to expect out of that matchup. Roger betting on himself in this matchup. Bellator initially offered him a 3-fight deal, ends up only taking a 1-fight deal here. Obviously, he gets a win, puts himself in a great situation. For Benson Henderson, I mean, you have to imagine that this has been a disappointing signing for Bellator.
Yeah. He has been matched up with some of the best in Bellator, to be fair. I mean, both Pitbull brothers, Michael Chandler and Koresh Goff, ends up with 3 decision losses and a kind of a weird win over Patricio Pitbull. So, obviously, it's a major disappointment. But looking at the tough challengers Benson has taken on, it don't get much easier than what he's going to get against Roger Huerta at Bellator 196. I mean, simply put, Roger Huerta has not looked like a viable UFC, a viable top-tier MMA fighter since 2007. Now, it's 2018, and who knows what happens. I mean, maybe this is the story of the weekend. If Roger Huerta pulls out a victory, this would be a truly remarkable story. It would be something where you just never count out whatever happens in Budapest, Hungary. But this is a major mismatch on paper, just given the way these guys' careers have gone. But there has to be an enormous amount of pressure for Benson Henderson because of his lack of success in his Bellator run. And honestly, anything less of a dominant performance would be a disappointment out of Benson Henderson here.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, I don't know what to expect. I mean, my pick is going to be Benson Henderson in this one. I think it's more about kind of, betting against Roger Huerta than anything else. I don't know if I'll be watching this fight card on Friday night or not. I mean, I'll obviously be DVRing it, but I guess it'll probably depend on whatever spoilers I see on social media on Friday.
Yeah. Yeah, same here. I mean, there's a great likelihood we will see the finish of this main event on social media, like right after it happens. That would kind of make me not want to watch it live on tape. So I probably won't watch this as it airs, but I definitely will watch it on DVR. And I think it's going to be I think this will likely be the first time Benson Henderson has gone out and won a fight in the first round since, man, I'm looking at this. Won a fight in the first round since WBC 48, April 2010 against Donald Cerrone. I think he repeats that here.
Yeah, it's just crazy to think of one of their highest paid fighters is fighting on tape delay. That to me is just the crazy aspect of that. But of course, we'll talk about Bellator 196 next week on the podcast. We'll see what happens there. In terms of some MMA news and notes to mention, send the healing vibes out to Matt Brown, who tore his ACL. You talk about a matchup that was a matchup that a lot of people are going to be interested in, him and Carlos Condit. So with the injury to Matt Brown, Carlos Condit is now going to take on Alex Cowboy Oliveira. Still a very interesting matchup there at 170 pounds. And we are 1 week away from some Justin Gaethje, Dustin Poirier violence.
Yeah, man. Cannot wait for that. Talk about a fight of the year contender. Yeah, Condit Brown is a fight that, it looked like guaranteed violence. And I do feel bad for Carlos Condit because I think Oliveira may just be a tougher matchup for him. It was almost like him and Matt Brown were in similar points in their career They are almost a part of like the UFC welterweight legends division because, man, Carlos Condit just looked out of place in his last fight. Talk about crossroads. He is certainly on one, and I think his fight got a bit tougher against Alex Oliveira. But, geez, I am super sad. Just Condit versus Matt Brown is something that is just a Hall of Fame violence type fight.
Yeah, you know, was really looking forward to that one. Of course, that is on Fox next Saturday, UFC on Fox Air in Glendale, Arizona. So I'm looking forward to that one. We mentioned about interim titles earlier. Another interim title has been booked, RDA, Colby Covington. An interim title that just makes zero sense to me. Like, Woodley has talked about coming back in July. The guy defended his, had four title fights in, 13 months or something like that? And you're doing an interim title? Like, just call this a number one contender fight.
Yeah, this is stupid. This is awful. This is dumb. There should not be an interim. There should be no more interim championships. We must get rid of them. We already have five-round main events. There is no need for them, and especially in this situation where we're going to be talking about a Tyrone Woodley fight within this year. This is dumb, Jason. I hate it. I hate it so much. I hate stupid belts, and this is they're going to fight for a stupid belt.
Yeah, it's just you know, and it's a co-main event of the card down in Rio, which also, I mean, like, I could see. And then also, how much security are they going to have on Colby Covington that fight week in Brazil?
Oh, man, this is going to be insane. I can't believe they're putting him in Brazil. I mean, for the love of God, I tell you, instead of an interim title belt, you want to give him something to hold after a win. Winner gets like a golden boomerang. Do something like that. I don't know. But yeah, that's Colby awesome. Colby Covington's likely going to have multiple fights booked in Rio, and not all of them are against RDA.
Yeah, and man, it's I know they're doing a press conference on Friday in Brooklyn, and Colby Covington will be there, so I'm sure he will say something crazy that'll probably get a lot of headlines going on out there. Two other news items to mention. Chris Weidman is having thumb surgery. He is expecting a summer return. Also, Javi Ayala Chikongo has been booked for Bellator 199. This is a I don't think they've officially come out and said it's a heavyweight title alternate matchup, but they've already previously announced that both these guys would be alternates. And so I know what Daniel's going to be doing at Bellator 199. He's going to have his Javi Ayala t-shirt on.
Yeah, man. I already have made a custom UFC Javi Ayala fighter kit. To me, I go back, and Bellator 183 was an absolute robbery. He absolutely beat Roy Nelson multiple 10-7 rounds in favor of Javi Ayala. Honestly, we're talking about a guy who has, yes, a 10-6 record on paper, but looking at each fight, this guy should be 16-0. And Chikongo, I don't even know why he should show up for that fight. You talk about guys like Max Holloway taking fights that shouldn't be taken. If Javi Ayala's on the other side of the cage, you shouldn't be taking that fight. So I think Javi Ayala's probably going to win that fight first round, you know, knockout 6 seconds in, but it should be a good fight.
And that's still a little bit away. Also, should be announced, Bellator did announce that Lima McFarlane's going to defend her title in the main event of Bellator 201. But coming up next, you're going to hear two interviews that I've recently conducted. First up, you're going to hear my conversation with Peter Barrett, who's going to be fighting next Saturday at the Cage Titans event up there in Massachusetts. Then you're going to hear my conversation with Danny Ramirez, who fights next Friday night in L.A. at Combat Days America. So here are my conversations with Peter Barrett and Danny Ramirez. Peter, man, what's going on, man?
Hey, Jason, how you doing, man? Good to be back on the show. Always love catching up with you.
You've got a fight coming up here, April the 14th, Cage Titans 38, Court in Plymouth, Massachusetts, taking on Jay Ellis, which, you know, look, people can look at his record, see what his record is. To me, this is an amazing thing about him. This is going to be his 15th fight since the beginning of 2017. It's a guy, and I believe he actually has two other fights already scheduled along with your fight.
Yeah, he does. He's got my fight on the 14th, and then he's got, I believe, another fight on the 21st, and another fight maybe like a week after that. You know, God love him. Let's hope he makes it out of the cage with me, all right, and can still, you know, make those dates. But you know, that's all up to the next 15 minutes he's got ahead of him.
How would you describe your mindset heading into this one?
Well, you know, if we look at my performance last year, I started out with a hell of a fight against Vince, and then suffered two losses, the only two of my pro career. You know, a lot of things learned from both of those experiences, and I'm just looking to bounce back, get a win in the W column, I guess, get one in the W column, and move forward this year and put together a couple wins and hopefully catch the eye of those matchmakers that I've been working for so long.
Bounce back is a term we hear all the time when it comes to the fighters who are entering a fight following a loss. What does the term bounce back mean to you?
I've been working on a lot of things. Really spent a lot of time with the boxing coach and the boxing team that I've been working with to really get down my defense, to get down my range, to be more disciplined in my footwork and you know, the things that we kind of write off with boxing from the MMA world, really focus on those and hone that into my craft.
Discipline in your footwork, is that something that you even go back on the fights you won and realize that that's just something you weren't paying enough attention to?
I mean, I think everybody's their own biggest critic, and I, coming up along through the ranks, you know, I've always felt like I get hit a little too much, and really spending the time with the boxers and disciplining my footwork and learning ranges and how to really use my jab appropriately to maintain distance and you know, even to let the opponent come into my territory into my range, you know, without panicking or seeing that as a threat and knowing that I have control of the situation and then can counter strike on it. So it's part of the evolution that I needed, and I finally put the time in with it.
Evolution is another term we hear fighters talk about all the time, and you know, people look back at 2017 for you. Obviously, it's a disappointing year. What 2017 was? How do you look at 2017?
Well, you know, like I said, I started out with a great win against Vince, and then turned around and lost those two fights back to back. I think if I had not been so headstrong and taken a smarter fight, me and TJ wouldn't have fought necessarily then. Maybe a fight like Jay Ellis would have come into the situation at that point, but I was so hell-bent on proving to myself a minuscule point that I wanted the toughest fight I could get, and that's how I ended up with TJ. And sometimes it's better to take a step back and listen to your team, listen to your coaches, and let your management do what you pay them to do.
Is that one of the biggest learning lessons you say you've learned in this game?
Yes. You know, there's been a lot of conversations that I've had about how to appropriately choose fights and what you look for in an opponent. Especially, you know, I was 8-0, and I kind of maybe I got a little full of myself. Who knows? But I'm ready to listen. Be told who to fight, let my management take care of that. You know, no more ego trips or ego traps, however you want to look at it. So it's really not about who I'm fighting. It's about me and how I develop along the way.
And a lot of guys talk about that everyone talks about, oh, what's your game plan for a fight? And it seems more times than not, I hear fighters say at some point in their career, they thought way too much about their opponent and stop thinking about themselves. I mean, have you found yourself in a way of, you know, over the last couple of years of maybe you were looking too much into what your opponent does as opposed to what you need to do to win the fight?
Yes and no. I think part of me was listening to a lot of the criticism about who I fought and whether I deserved to have an 8-0 record, and I really let it get to me. And I think that was just an insecurity that I had to deal with. As a matter of fact, I'm one of the top guys in the Northeast at 145, at 155. I could probably jump up to 170 and fight a really healthy fight if I wanted to. I'm not the smallest guy out there, but it's really just being comfortable with who I am and what I do, and that's really what matters.
What weight class do you ultimately feel is where you will end up? Do you think it's 55?
55 is really easy. for me to make weight. Like right now, the last week I've been managing my weight in the low 60s. Like I could wake up and take a leak and make 155 if I had to. But I think to compete at the next level where we still see the guys cutting a ton of weight in the UFC, I think 45 would be my natural home at that level of athleticism. Like I said, we are seeing guys jump up weight classes. Tony Martin, my old teammate, him being one of them, he's now competing at 170, where he was, you know, previously a large lightweight. Other guys like Chiesa, they're just monsters at 155. And, you know, for me, seeing guys that size, I wondered, do I really have a competitive advantage walking in at a healthy 155 versus, you know, someone who sucked the weight and then just put the 10 to 15 pounds back on? And yeah, they're only competing probably like 75 to 80% of their potential, but they're going to have an additional 10 to 15 pounds on me. You know, there's a lot that goes into it. Thankfully, there's a lot of information out there that people are starting to pay attention to that they're really putting a lot of emphasis on. And you know, I think Cerrone was one of the first guys that jumped the weight class and said, and if I don't have to fight at 155 anymore, why would I? It's a lot easier. I feel healthier. I feel better. And it's big names like that that can lead the way for people to fight in a more natural weight class.
I mean, look who we're seeing come this weekend. Max, you know, jumping up to 155 to fight Khabib. I mean, hey, man, you got to give him a lot of credit. I mean, how many guys are going to step up on 6 days' notice and say, I want to take on Khabib Nurmagomedov?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I mean, I think everybody's still waiting for another tweet from the UFC to say, gotcha, but I don't think that's coming out.
I'll tell you, I was at my grandmother's on Easter Sunday, and my phone is blowing up. I kind of felt bad that I had to kind of walk out of the room and, you know, making the phone calls. But I mean, look, that's anyone who's ever, you know, talked to Max's management. This is a guy that just wants to fight, you know, looking forward to it. But you've got this matchup. You're still just under 2 weeks out, you know, from this matchup. And, you know, in terms of Jay, I mean, what are you expecting out of him? I mean, obviously, when you have the amount of fights that he's had, you know the type of fighter he is. I mean, right. Do you think, I mean, pretty much in your mind, like, I know how he's going to fight me. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to come out. I think he's going to come out, you know, looking to catch me in the first minute or two, you know, the first round. From what I've seen him fight, I think, in person two or three times. He just fought on the second to last or the last Cage Titans in January. Or he fought on the Cage Titans in January. He ended up getting submitted within the first 2 minutes. But I know he comes out and he looks to bring it hard, fast. His gas tank is questionable. I mean, with close to 100 fights, is his skill level really lacking, or is it just, you know, his thought process? So who knows? I mean, you'd think someone with close to 100 fights knows how to fight and they know how to handle themselves. It's just how bad do they want it? So considering he's had ample amount of time to prepare for me, maybe we'll see something a little different out of him. But I'm willing to put my money on he's going to come out looking for a finish in the first 2 minutes, and then it's gonna be mine. But that's not to say I'm taking him lightly. I've been training my ass off. I've been managing my weight. I've been, you know, hitting all my training sessions, and I'm looking to build some momentum and string together a couple wins here real quick. And you know, my goal is to be on the contender or better by the end of the summer.
You know, could you ever see yourself pushing 100 fights?
I mean, the boxers that I train with, they're like, oh, my amateur career was like 150 fights. And I'm going, I thought I had a lot at 10. And these guys are going, oh, no, I fought like every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks. But again, boxing is so much different than MMA that it's hard to compare how they do it. You know, like Marky DeLuca just fought on Golden Boy on ESPN this weekend. He's the guy that got me involved with this team. Another kid, TJ, he just fought on Murphy's Boxing 2 weeks on St. Patty's Day in Boston. And these guys have been not catered to, but managed very properly. The right fights were chosen. Their amateur careers are very extensive. And now, you know, at, you know, a 20-20-0 as a pro fighter with really close to 200 fights under their belt, maybe, I don't know. It's just, I wish I had that kind of upbringing, but you just don't see that in MMA. There's too much wear and tear in the body to uphold that kind of a fighting schedule.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple guys, and Jay's one of these guys, a very rarity in the sport that can fight that quickly. I mean, kind of, I guess it makes you wonder of what's training like to have your body in that type of shape to continue to take all these fights. I mean, I think that's kind of that's an anomaly in the sport.
I mean, if you do look at Jay's record, and Tapology does a good job about detailing wins and losses a lot. I mean, he has won a few fights in the last year or two, which is good to see that he still got it there. But some of his fights only lasted about 30 seconds and he got choked out. So was there any wear and tear in his body? Probably not. You know, maybe he got punched once, taken down and choked out, you know? So it really comes down to the type of fighter and how much you put into it.
Tapology is my number one site to go to when it comes to, especially doing prep for interviews, whatnot. Because the thing I love about their website is if the fight got canceled, more, especially for like a UFC fight, it tells you exactly the reason why the fight didn't happen. I mean, it's a great resource.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I've used it with my last few opponents. I mean, I've used it to make sure my records were accurate. It's a great resource for anyone in the sport.
And I've talked to Fires and managers that said, hey, you know, if there's ever an issue on your Tapology page, they answer their emails pretty quickly. And you know, as long as it's all verified information, it gets fixed.
Yeah, I think there's been a couple things on mine that have come up, and within hours of the email being sent, it's been fixed.
Yeah, it's crazy. But we're just under 2 weeks from your fight. Peter, man, as always, I appreciate you coming on the show. Where can everybody follow you at on social media?
Twitter is at Slippery's World, Instagram SlipperyPete145, and on Facebook, I think SlipperyPeteMMA will pull me up. Always entertaining, always worth a laugh, always shooting from the hip and keeping people smiling, because, I mean, at the end of the day, that's what life's all about, just enjoying yourself and having fun.
Danny, I really appreciate the time. First time we've had a chance to talk, so I gotta know, what is the origin of the nickname The Realist?
Oh man, thanks for having me, first of all. The origin of The Realist, got it back in high school. It just came out of nowhere, man. A little tagger, write or whatever he wanted on my backpack, and he wrote The Realist, and I guess it just stuck through high school up until.
And of course, you've made this jump into MMA. You had some amateur fights, turning pro in 2015. How would you summarize your pro career to this point?
I think it started out, you know, very well, you know, and you know, I hit a couple bumps down the road, and for the most part, I think it's going well for me. I got a couple fights left. See where it takes me.
You talk about those bumps in the road, and fighters always talk about how it's those fights that kind of make you realize what you need to do and how to be successful in this sport. Is that kind of your takeaway from those fights? Is just it was a learning experience and ultimately made you a better fighter?
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I mean, obviously, I take something from each and every one of those fights and improve on it. And that's what we've done, you know. We lose one, we win one, and we just keep learning. And so eventually it's got to stick, you know.
And you're taking on Eric Gonzalez here, a rematch. When this is first brought to your attention, you know, what were your thoughts about, you know, accepting this rematch?
At first I didn't want to, but you know what? If it's in L.A. and that's the only fight I can get in L.A., I'll take it. You know, I'd rather fight the guy I lost to last, but. You know, this fight's okay.
They, you know, a cliche you hear in the fight game is the guy who lost the first fight has an advantage in the second fight because they understand what they did wrong in the first fight. I know you're not going to agree with that cliche because you won the first fight.
Yeah.
You know, why would you say that cliche is wrong in terms of this fight?
Man, the first fight, you know, I thought that I wasn't at my best. I gassed out. I was extremely tired, and I still beat him. You know, and he has to improve a whole lot if he wants to beat me, you know, now that I know what I did wrong. And I don't think he has a chance this fight. I think it's going to go worse for him.
When you think about your preparations for that first matchup, how would you say preparations are different this time around?
Because, you know, the first fight we were only doing, you know, a lot of stand-up, not a lot of wrestling, and that's exactly what I did in the fight. I wrestled them, and I just gassed out. You know, we weren't prepared. This fight or this camp, we're coming in, you know, we're doing everything, every aspect of it, and just being better prepared than the first fight.
I've talked to a lot of guys about kind of, you know, going down memory lane here to your first pro fight, which did not last very long for you. 39-second win. What do you remember most about that night?
Man, I was nervous, and you know, when you know, as an amateur, you're thinking pro, man, this is a big step, you know. But I don't know, man. It was awesome. It was awesome. Just the butterflies and everything coming into that fight, and a whole lot of more people, you know, so it was awesome.
Do you still get nervous for a fight?
I do a little bit until, you know, you go in there and they're saying your name, and, you know, once they say fight, it's all gone, you know, but it's always a new feeling of nervousness.
Is it more, is it the nerves of just like kind of walking out to the cage, and then once that cage door closes, it's just kind of, in analogy, another day in the office?
Yeah, man. Well, you know what? I don't know, man. I really don't feel anything in the cage. It's just walking up, you know, the excitement, you know, of seeing your family and your friends and everybody else that supports you. And then just the nervousness of the fight, you know, being a fight, you know?
And, you know, obviously you go out here, you have this matchup. Have you started to think about, you know, what lies ahead after this fight?
Man, I just want to fight the best of whoever they got. You know, I'm just trying to move my way up and just keep getting wins. Because if you don't get wins in this game, you have no say.
Obviously, you're trying to get yourself out in front of more and more people. Obviously, Combates America has a nice footprint here in MMA. What would you want the fans to know about you that maybe this is their first time hearing you?
Man, what? I started fighting when I was in the Marines. I did 7 years in the military, and then I transitioned out and continued fighting. But that's where I started my fighting in the service, and now that's what I'm doing now as a civilian.
Was that your introduction to martial arts?
It was, I mean, wrestling in high school, I would have to say, but you know, once I started fighting, it would have been like 7 years already, but I think it was just a combination of everything, you know, just the wrestling and then just being in the ring.
Anyone in
competing?
Anyone in your family surprised that you're a professional fighter?
Oh, no. I fought a lot in school, you know, but, you know, and I have that kind of attitude, the fighter attitude, but no, I don't think nobody was surprised.
Is there a switch that you have to turn off and turn on whether, you know, you're in the gym or outside the gym in terms of kind of that
no,
fighter?
Not really, man. I'm pretty laid back, but you know, there's always the not, you know, not in the actual fight in the ring. And then there's the like normal you.
You know, mentioning about, you know, you're just a normal guy. You know, what do you like to do for fun just to kind of get your mind off the fight game?
Man, just spend time with my family, my dogs, and just chill. You know, I really, if I'm not in fight camp, you know, I'm still around the gym, but not really, you know, doing much, you know.
What's your biggest motivation?
My mom, my family, again. You know, she worked hard, you know, to get us where we're at now. So that's my motivation right there.
Now, does your mom come to your fights?
You know what? She has not been to any of my fights, you know, in person. You know, she has a hard time even watching it there with me, you know, on the computer. You know, she just gets really nervous. You know, one day she will, but, you know, I don't blame her. You know, I just know how she is. And she'd just rather me call her after the fight and say, hey, I'm okay, you know?
It seems like that's kind of a majority of moms is like, you know, they don't want to be there on fight night because, you know, obviously they can't control anything, but yeah, it's after the fact.
Yeah. I just don't want to see, you know, if I do get hurt and then, I mean, you know, it just sucks seeing them like that, you know.
But of course, you've got the fight here coming up on April 13th, Combat Days America. I really appreciate Tom. Where can all my listeners follow you out on social media?
On Instagram, it's Realist Kiddo. Facebook, Danny Ramirez, The Realist. Also on Twitter, it's Realist Kiddo. So give me a follow.
Danny, man, I appreciate your time.
Thank you, man, for having me. I appreciate it.
And there were my interviews with Peter Barrett and Danny Ramirez. Appreciate both those fighters giving me some time to talk about their matchups that will be taking place next weekend. Peter fighting up in Massachusetts and Danny fighting in L.A. But, Daniel, let's wrap up this week's edition of the podcast by going back to last week's MMA. First off, Tony Lopez scores win number 60, winning a title there at the Alaska Fighting Championship show. Also, Sean Santella wins his fourth straight. He's now 6-1 in his last seven. And Tyson Nam lost a decision at Fight Nights Global 86.
Wow. Well, can you give me the details on the Tony Lopez fight? I think every time Tony Lopez fights, we should talk about it. So who did he beat? What's going on here?
It was a doctor stoppage after the third round there. And it's crazy. I mean, this guy fights literally it seems like almost two times a month. He goes out there. He's 44 years old, but continues to go out there and get victories. Now 60-28-1, no contest. He defeated Brian Ryan, who is 20-8 in his career. And according to Tapology, Tony's next fight is not scheduled till June. I can't see that happening.
Absolutely not. Every time Tony Lopez fights, we're going to let you know.
And, Daniel, he fought three times in March. And I'm not saying March counting multiple years. No, March of 2018, he fought March the 10th, got a submission win over John Hill, came back 7 days later, defeats Dan Charles by submission, and then has a fight 11 days after that against the win over Brian Ryan. I mean, man, you know. And is only in, and he is 5-1 in his last six. The one loss is to Cody East. That was back in December of last year. But a guy that's just, you know, super active. And I mean, look, he's not. I don't ever see him getting to the UFC, and he probably would never sign with Bellator because then he'd only fight like two or three times a year. So he's probably just going to be making that regional scene tour.
Yeah, man, we got to keep it up to date. You excited for WrestleMania?
Oh God. I might watch it. I might. I don't think I can make, like, doesn't start like at 7 o'clock and it's not going to end till like midnight.
It's supposed to be a 7-hour card. That's including the pre-show. There are going to be 14 matches on this card. UFC.
I will say this. I did see the clip from Monday Night Raw where Stephanie McMahon told Ronda Rousey, "We know how you handle losses." I was like, ooh.
That was good.
Ooh. I was like, because I was wondering after what happened last week on ESPN, would there be some kind of subtle dig in there? I was like, wow.
Yeah, that was a great line. And oh man, Ronda Rousey, I'm not looking forward to this match because they put Ronda Rousey through a table. And for one, they must have geeked that table up so good. Like I work wrestling shows down in the valley every week. And, you know, one way we gig up a table, because the most embarrassing thing is you put a guy on a table and it doesn't break. And so the way we do it, and we really fuck this table. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to curse. We really screw this table up. We take out the frame of the table, the metal part.
Okay.
And then we literally – we take out all the screws, and then we also get like a – so like a knife or something, and we will cut on the bottom of the table. So if you look under the table, you'll see just a wide cut. So we make sure we will break every single table. And it looks kind of awful sometimes when we pull the table out from under the ring and it's flimsy. Anyways, moral of the story, they must have gigged that table up so bad because the way Ronda Rousey landed on that table, man, she did not put her weight down. But the worst part is after she went through the table, she did not know how to sell it, man. She was just looking straight at Ronda Rousey and Triple H making eye contact after being put through the table, trying to make a mean face. And it was very awkward. So my advice for those putting together the Ronda Rousey match is they cannot let her sell at all. They cannot beat on her. They just need – the whole match needs to be setting up a hot tag where Ronda Rousey comes in and beats the hell out of Stephanie McMahon, because she does not have that seasoning. I mean, Jason, it takes like 7 years to really understand how to be a good wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
And she is going to be – it's going to be interesting to see if she's the main event of the card. I don't think she will be. I think it might be John Cena versus Undertaker, even though that match isn't announced. But a lot of wrestling fans will be mad if she is.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, look, there's going to be a lot of coverage for her. I mean, I'm already seeing it on MMA websites. But, you know, it's – I'll be interested to see if she is truly a full-time wrestler 4 to 6 months from now.
Yeah, man, I think it's going to be dependent on how embarrassing her first few moments out in the spotlight are, because there is money in Ronda Rousey. She's just got to perform. I think it's going to work out. It's going to be stressful. Actually, here's one MMA topic we can leave on, Jason. I'll throw this at you. This is an awesome time of year for a wrestling fan, because also in a couple of weeks, they're going to release the – maybe actually this week – they're going to release the Andre the Giant documentary on HBO.
Yes.
It looks like a great documentary. So – we probably should have prepped this. Maybe we can come up with some better answers. And if you guys are listening still, send us a note. But what MMA fighter would you like to see a documentary on, Jason?
Ooh, man. That's a good one. Why does Chuck Liddell come to mind?
Well, I think that's a great one, just because that guy is an icon.
Yeah, just because I think there's a story to be told there. I mean, Tito, I think there's I'm thinking more of the older, you know, type fighters. You know, the fighters that, you know, when MMA was peaking. I mean, you know, to me, those are two names that kind of stick out to me.
Yeah, I see that. To me, even somebody who isn't a big UFC star, and I don't know if there already are documentaries about him. But I would really enjoy what really well done out Hicks and Gracie documentary. Out of all the Gracie family members, he to me, or maybe even just a Gracie documentary, but Hicks in particular, when we were talking about fights that never happened, I mean, a fight I would always want to see is Hicks and Gracie versus anybody good, because the legends of how great he was are super interesting. So, I mean, that would be one I would like.
Speaking of documentaries, I was up late the other night, and the 30 for 30 for Tommy Morrison came on. That was really good.
I never saw that.
Yeah, I probably started watching it. It had to be at least like 30 minutes into it. It was really good, really well done. You know, they went into when, you know, they find out that he's HIV positive, and of course that was the night before a fight, and all that. It was very interesting, and it kind of went into when he was trying to get commissions to give him a license after all this happened, and kind of, you know, where everything, you know, took a downturn in his life, where he ended up going to jail. And I saw that was really good. I have not watched the Conor McGregor one on Netflix yet. That's in my list on Netflix to watch, but just really haven't had time to sit down for, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours to watch that thing.
Dude, we're going to continue to put this documentary off until 10 years from now. Then we're going to have to absolutely do it. I mean, another documentary, by the way, I would love to see a Bob Sapp documentary. I think that would be crazy.
How have we not had Bob Sapp versus Tony Lopez?
That you got, if you just talk to Cam Soda, I feel like that's the main event of their next card. I think that's a great – I mean, yeah, just the sheer likelihood of that fight never happening is amazing.
By the way, speaking of that event, it is now listed on the Florida Boxing Commission schedule on their website. So that is going to be a sanctioned event by the Florida State Boxing Commission.
Jesus. Can you imagine the – that is insane. Can you imagine the discussion between those two? That is crazy. I don't even understand. By the way, last documentary guy I'll leave you with, Diaz brother documentary.
Oh God, that has to be the number one.
Mm-hmm. That has to be the number one. And yeah, I mean, to me, when I think of like my favorite things about telling MMA stories, nothing will top that time Ben Foulkes spent a lot of time writing articles about fight camp. Oh my God, I can't remember which training camp he was. Was it Jackson Denman? I don't know when it was, but it was a while ago. And Ben Foulkes did just a phenomenal job just writing about a training camp. So even just following a training camp days in and days out would be great. But yeah, there's, you know, I do hope we get some good MMA documentaries, and it'll be interesting to see what the first 30 for 30 is for mixed martial arts.
Yeah, that would be very interesting. But that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, we'll be back next week as we are going to recap UFC 223, also Bellator 196, and talk about whatever else is going on in the world of mixed martial arts. Of course, you can give Daniel a follow on Twitter at Daniel Galvan DGG. You can give me a follow at Jason_Floyd. Of course, if you're not subscribed to this podcast, do appreciate if you do that. Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play. So that's going to do it for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday morning on RadioInfluence.com.
This is an In the Trenches with Ian Beckles. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I played against Deion Sanders, and I would say that's the case for anybody on the earth ever.
Other than Deion Sanders.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was that good.
I'll tell him to switch the analogy.
He was that good. He was that good.
Well,
I'm not an old, but when I watch film, I love giving this analogy. Like, John Gruden never really talked good about anybody. Never. We played the Giants one game. And he disrobed Jason Sehorn. He goes, he can't cover me. We're going to go after him all day. And we did, and we crushed Jason Sehorn. I think it was a year after he made the Pro Bowl. I'm telling you, you couldn't cover nobody on film. I'm telling you. Then we played the Atlanta Falcons. And John Gruden walked up, and he had a big screen up there, and he put the defense on, and he put a box over from the nose guard over. And he goes, we won't throw the ball here. And I was like, what? He goes, we're not going to throw the ball on this side of the ball. I was like, we're not going to throw on the whole left side of the field. He goes, and I didn't ask him, but we're not throwing it here. So our whole game plan was to throw it right. We did not, with Bobby Hoying as quarterback, we did not throw it left at all. Because if Deion Sanders was 15 yards from the ball, it's an interception, I'm telling you. That you should watch on film. Dude, he would be in dude's pocket all game long. And then Gruden goes, watch this play. And he goes, look at him. And he stops it. And the whole game, they didn't go to Deion's way. So before the snap, he's on his knee. He's on his knee.
Deion Sanders is?
Yeah. So he's like, he's goading you to throw the ball over there.
Yeah.
And then he would do this. He would let the receiver be open.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Till you let that ball go. And you would see us. And I was like, God damn. And then he got an interception. We played in, like, I think Fulton County, something, one of the old stadiums. He got an interception. And I was known to get tackles. I got a bunch of tackles every year. I mean, I was a defensive player growing up. And I saw him, and he was 70 yards away. And I go, I'm going to get this son of a bitch. So I take a quick look around, swivel, and then I start running. Then I look up, and he's already high-stepping and with his hand behind his head. And I go, he just moves 60 yards in 1 second.
Yeah.
I've never seen a player that fast.
In the Trenches with Ian Beckles can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.